Welcome to the Compassionate Capitalist Radio Show with host Karen Ranz. A compassionate capitalist is someone who invests their money into entrepreneur endeavors to bring innovation to the market, impact their community, create jobs, and generate wealth for all those involved. Karen and her guests share insights and best practices for entrepreneurs to succeed and scale their business and investors to share in that success without all the risks. And now.
Welcome back to the Compassionate Capitalist podcast show. And of course, I'm Karen Ranz. I have a great guest today, Eric Hazard from Vested Ventures. We're going to talk about fintech and all things fintech because, you know, as I've been, fintech, when it first came onto the marketplace, was like this real novel sort of slice or a sector of technology, and it was, people were struggling to get their head around it. It meant a lot of different things for different people. We're going to get into what does it actually mean today. I'll lead into that. And we're also going to talk about how fintech entrepreneurs, because it is a popular sector and a lot of different types of industry solutions and things have kind of fallen in under the umbrella of fintech, it's hard sometimes to stand out as a fintech entrepreneur. So Eric's going to talk to us about how the best practices for entrepreneurs and startups to stand out in the crowded space. We're also going to talk about something that, as you've listened to my shows in the past, you know that I am really committed and passionate about economic democratization. And economic democratization, part of what the Compassionate Capitalist movement is about, is teaching people how they can invest in entrepreneurs at whatever stage, at whatever level of discretionary income they have to do that. And the first step of deciding to invest in entrepreneurs is growing your financial literacy so that you can decide what's good. This is not just invest off of emotion or make emotional decisions and things like that. But along with that, along with what I do, economic democratization says without proper knowledge of how financial markets work and how money works, so many people in our society become victims of predators that tap into their lack of knowledge or understanding of something. And I won't go there, but we have generations of elements of our community that have had their assets stripped from them decades and decades ago, 100 years ago, let's say, because they lacked basic literacy to understand what was happening. And they were just trusting people that had things taken from them. That has created a great gap that we have in our economy today. And through financial literacy of everybody and all those in the underserved markets, we have an ability to start to change those patterns, right? Fintech also has a role in how companies are able to strengthen their relationships between their businesses, within their businesses and their employees and their customers, and truly be a force for good. I've had guests on my show that have talked about some of those technologies that fintech has enabled for people to get their money that they're working for, not just every 2 weeks, but when they need it, if a company elects to use one of those fintech solutions. So there's just so many things that it touches on. So let me tell you about Vested Ventures, and then I'll introduce you to Eric. And if you're watching on video, you see he's smiling there very patiently waiting for me to finish my introduction, but I hope you're excited. And you're going to listen all the way through this, and then you're going to get such great information, you're going to share it with all your friends. So Vested Ventures believes that fintech can be a force for good. They support ultra-lean fintech entrepreneurs who want to make the world a better, smarter, and financially healthier place. Through a unique combination of money, network, and exposure, Vested Ventures takes great ideas and makes them realities. Their successful investments include Spare, an app that helps people automatically round up their dinner bills to feed the hungry, and another company, Ramesh, which is an AI, artificial intelligence company, that is helping firms, including major financial organizations, better understand the needs of their customers, those underserved markets. And so, joining Compassionate Capital Show today from Vested Ventures is Eric Hazard, who is the CEO of Vested Ventures. Eric is a financial technology and communications veteran that's been identifying, works to identify the investment opportunities for Vested Ventures, structuring those investments, and integrating portfolio companies into Vested's complete suite of communication services. During his career, he has worked with some of the most recognizable brands in financial services, such as Charles Schwab, BNY Mellon, Northern Trust, Swift, and Deutsche Bank, to identify their target markets, launch new products, and bring a clearer focus on the value proposition through brand development. Eric also holds a certificate in fintech from MIT and is the host of the online video series called Focus on Fintech. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Karen. Yeah, you got it all in. I know it's a lot, but we got there in the end, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. So as I said, let's start with the basic definition of fintech, because it has, as I said, evolved over time from automating bank transactions and mobile payment systems to supply chain management with blockchain and gamification of financial literacy apps. So tell our audience, how does Vested Ventures define this fintech space?
I wish it was simple. I think sometimes it's a little bit, you know it when you see it. I really start to think now that what fintech has become is a bit more about the process by how it is that we're helping people to access money, how they can help people to access financial education. And that access is so important. And that's really what fintech is about. When I started my career, and it's been over 20 years ago, there wasn't a fintech. There was finance and there was technology. And yeah, if you put the two together, you might talk about something like financial technology. And there's been companies that have been doing financial technology and focusing on that for 50 years now. And they've done amazing jobs. And some of them today are publicly traded companies that work with some of the world's largest financial institutions. And that kind of legacy financial technology is an important part of the story because it forms what we think of as fintech today. We have a joke inside of Vested Ventures, which is now it's hashtag fintech, right? It's all about influencers and all the fun part of it. But that financial technology is really important because if you go back all the way to the late 60s, there was a moment in time which you had what we call the financial crisis, or I'm sorry, the paperwork crisis. And Wall Street actually was unable to process transactions. So there was the New York Stock Exchange, and there would be buy and sell orders happening. This was in 1968.
Yeah.
And they were unable to process the physical paper transactions. They actually had to shut the exchanges down for a day once a week so that they could actually do the paperwork. And this gave rise to a need inside of finance to actually automate these systems, to build the technology that they would need to be able to create more automation there. And that's the kind of legacy there for financial technology that became fintech. So through this kind of development, through the operations, through all of this now, we've arrived to what we think of as fintech today. And it is, it's just simplifying the process by which we can access our money or access our financial systems.
Yeah, I have a little story I have to slip in there. So back when I was at IBM and I was on the complex opportunity, I was a complex opportunity business manager. And actually, prior to that, it was in the mobile and wireless services space, and we had created all of these integrated partnerships. I had negotiated all the contracts with, and for those that are a little older than me, might remember Proxim Wireless, but, you know, handheld, you know, mobile devices and all that stuff. And Chicago Board of Trade had come to us trying to find a solution. They wanted to develop, they wanted to standardize on some handhelds, put a wireless network in on the trading floor, and they were going to develop an app to do exactly, because they still at that day had little pieces of paper that somebody, just like out of Trading Places, when somebody would take a piece of paper, run up to the top, you know, for the transaction to happen, and then somebody would come back down, and they wanted to automate that because they were falling behind in sort of the timing of some transactions, because it, you know, you had that lag time of something getting processed. So I can even imagine what it was like when you had to shut down for a whole day. And it was quite the eye-opening experience on, one, the trading floor, the needs of the financial sector for that, and that kind of stuff had not been automated even in, this was probably 1998. So anyhow, all right. There's my little slice
exactly
of history.
And we're catching up to all of it, right? And yeah, you can automate all that. And once you've got that infrastructure in place, once you have the technology framework that you need
then it was all about building all the applications on top of it. That one of the co-founders of Vesta, Dan Simon, wrote a book that was called The Money Hackers. And it's all about this moment in time around 2007, where you started to see the applications of today's hashtag fintech being built on top of this framework and infrastructure that had been developed since the late 60s and early 70s.
Yeah. All right. So one of the things that I know it's near and dear to your heart, but the lack of financial literacy has created, and we talked about this earlier as some of the impact it has on the economy, but it really had created, we can see pieces of time ripe for, the market was ripe for predatory lending, payday lending, which severely impacts those people that do have to wait for a paycheck and, you know, need they're living in a cash flow mode, right? And the fees that they put onto that, you know, all these fees that the banks put on, you know, consumer lending abuse and the structure of the way student loans have been, you know, were structured there. Some of them are just normal, like you and I might have had, and some of them have this real burden of where they're calculating interest on an ongoing basis, even while the student is in school. And that's why we have this upside down situation with student lending now. And even when you can look back to the Great Recession that we had in the 2009-2011 timeframe, most of that was triggered by predatory lenders providing mortgages to people that normally would not have qualified perhaps for that big of a mortgage, but they took their, because they didn't have a down payment, they took their down payment, they added it to the total loan with a balloon payment in 5 years, you know, that, you know, they were interest only, and all of a sudden they couldn't support that. And the way the financial sector sold those notes, you know, it was just a mess that got untangled. It took 8 years, you know, to untangle it and recover from that. All of that really could be directed back to financial literacy. So talk about what financial literacy really means, why fintech is uniquely qualified to help provide the solutions that the marketplace needs for this.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start a little bit about financial literacy, and you actually hit on some topics that are very passionate about. I'm very passionate about. I think financial literacy is more important than ever. We live in a world in which individuals are held hostage by institutions of higher education via their student loans, and the burden of retirement falls squarely on the family. So people need to understand the basics of money management to ensure that they have a healthy financial life. And that, to me, is why financial literacy is so important. You mentioned student loans. And I think about predatory lenders. The nation's largest predatory lender is the federal government via the student loans that they're issuing. We should not be burdening people with the cost of their education in order for them to just get a normal middle-class life. And the way that we do it, we're calculating some loans are structured to start accruing interest when you're still in school. The forbearances are opaque at best. All the schemes, and I use the word schemes deliberately here, that the government's erected to basically give people false hope that loans may one day be paid off, only to find out later that you didn't fill out the right form or follow the right procedure and you go right back to square one. We have to resolve that, right? I think that fintech is actually up to the challenge and it's doing some really unique things in that world. One of the companies that is inside the Vested Ventures portfolio is this company called Unest. And Unest provides an app for 529 plans.
Oh, okay. So,
529 plans, for those that are not aware, are college savings plans. And college savings plans that allow you to save for your family and others close to you in a tax-free way. So you started a 529 plan, and then you select funds, and it allows your savings to grow for your kids or grandkids or whatever it may be to go to college. And I think of things like that as actually going to be really important as we look at what the future of higher education is going to be. I think we're also coming into a reckoning with institutions of higher learning. I think it's absolutely fascinating what's happening right now at the higher levels at large institutions like Columbia and NYU. The presidents and deans are all retiring because they know that there's a reckoning that's about to happen. It's going to come a couple different ways, actually. One of which is because we've tightened the restrictions on immigration in the U.S., you're not going to have nearly the amount of students coming in internationally who've typically paid a lot higher way, paid a lot higher fare. So then you're going to have to look to the current student body of U.S. students and find a way to get even higher tuitions from them. And I'm not sure they have a plan for that. And the federal government, as we're seeing right now, is under tremendous pressure from students and people with student loans to either forgive those loans or create other ways in which those loans can be paid back. So I think the way higher education is structured is going to have to change. And that goes a little bit beyond fintech. But what I say is that now you're looking at other areas of education that aren't the typical four-year degree. People getting specialized certificates, gaining knowledge in certain technologies or processes or whatever that may be, that then immediately qualify them for really well-paying jobs, particularly in the technology sector. And I think that's where fintech is starting to create more access. And access is such an important point. I like to tell everyone that financial literacy begins with financial access. And as much as I think that the federal government has a real debt that they need to pay back for higher education, financial institutions for too long have erected artificial barriers to prevent underserved communities from accessing financial services. And when they do a grant access to underserved communities, they then charge exorbitant fees to punish people on the margins. This is unconscionable. It's unethical. It's unmoral. That has to change. And this is where I think fintech is having a tremendous difference. Yeah. Why do I have to pay a $35 overdraft fee for a check that I may have written on the margins? What purpose does that serve? You're a well-capitalized financial institution. You don't need that for your capitalization. That is just a punitive punishment. Fintechs have realized, like, what if we just gave people access to a checking account and a debit card and just created ways in which they could use it to pay for things like groceries or transportation or whatever needs that they may have, and we don't punish them because the funds didn't quite level up in whatever system that we have. And that's why financial access is so important. But even then too, where fintechs, I think, provide a really incredible service is by thinking through how it is that people access their finance, right? So if you are a typical kind of Main Street brick and mortar bank, your hours are generally Monday to Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., some derivative thereof. You may be open on a Saturday. You probably never open on a Sunday. But what about people that work in, I don't know, retail or work overnight shifts or don't typically aren't available to go to a bank between 8 and 5? How do you provide banking and financial services to them? And the typical financial institutions have done a very poor job of it. Like, well, we have an app, but in order to start the account, you have to come in and sign the papers, right? You've created this burden for people. Why would you do that? Fintechs have done a very good job of saying, like, no need to have a burden. Actually, let's find a way that we can actually give you access to a financial system that you're going to need to be able to build that financial literacy that you need. We're very passionate about it at Vested Ventures. One of our portfolio companies is a company called Coins, Q-O-I-N-S.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah, Coins is fascinating. They are in a very similar mission to the one that we describe at Vested Ventures. And they believe in serving the underserved community. They're founded in Atlanta. They do a lot of outreach to the underserved community in Atlanta. They provide a debit card. It's all online. It's all app enabled. But they also look at how they help to solve the debt side of the equation. So debt, huge problem a lot of people face. Some of that debt, something like student loans or mortgages or credit cards or whatever it may be, it's very difficult to figure out how to pay down debt. This is, and it's done that way deliberately, I might add. The credit card companies are very good at making it so you don't want to pay down the debt, at least not in a way in which they can't first extract their pounds of flesh along the way. So a company like Coins comes in and says, what if we gave you a debit card? What if we gave you an app that used rounding technology so that as you made purchases, the balance of that purchase goes to paying down the debt? And let's really focus on the debt side of the equation. I think that's where the next evolution is going to come, particularly the difference that fintech is going to make. Let's help people address their debt. Let's give them really good savings habits. Let's give them access to the financial system so that they can start to make a difference in how they think about their own financial health.
Yeah. And I've also heard of some solutions that are trying to address the whole credit score issue. And that says, if you've been paying rent on your apartment for 2 years, why can't you qualify and prove that you can afford a mortgage, you know, that you're, you know, all the different things, because you've been consistent in making your payments and things like that. And those kinds of things don't count towards a credit score that would help people.
Absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
Absolutely
right.
Absurd.
Yeah.
And it's, and why is that, right? I mean, look, the credit agencies, they are, people should be going to jail. If you're the executive at Equifax, you deserve prison. What you do absolutely locks people out of the financial system. Never mind that you're not a good fiduciary or custodian of people's financial information, right? Then you have a data breach and what? Huh? No repercussions. But I think that's going to change in a hurry too. Just like you said, there's been a lot of actions that are now allowing people to build credit scores through non-traditional means.
Yeah.
But who set that up, right? Like, so it's all a cabal. So the credit card companies, they then form this other thing called a credit agency, and they feed their data to them and say, no, they're good payers because they use a credit card. You know, the credit cards that we've set up, like, no. It really should be including like how people pay for things like their mortgages, their utility bills, all manner of other things that fall outside some of the traditional credit ratings.
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole nature of unbanked, right? That's something that, you know, years ago when I was running my angel investor group, we would have some companies come in and they were, you know, creating a new, like a new cell phone service or phone service to be able to get, because there were so many people that were unbanked. And the thing was, is that unbanked had this negative connotation to it. It is like, you're not worthy of being banked. But in reality, there are so many, because of these barriers, there are so many things. When you have internationals that come here, I had a friend of mine that's like an executive in a company move here from England, right? She's here, all
exactly.
That stuff. It took her 6 months to be able to get a bank account because she had to have some history of you know, utility bills and, you know, things like that to prove that she was here, even though she could prove that she was employed and she could prove all this other kind of stuff. And then people that go through divorce, their financial situations, their accounts change, all of a sudden they can't do that. Then you got folks that, you know, because of health reasons, you know, things that have caused a setback that was beyond their control. There's so many things that they do, just like, you know, you're talking about, it's the financial literacy, but it's also access in the way that they
access
judge a person, you know, on these arbitrary criteria versus whether they can actually, you know, pay a bill or, you know, do those kind of things. And the whole, I love the idea of people being, and it's become something that is a retention factor as well as a draw factor, because we saw in so much of happening with our gig economy, right? With our gig economy during COVID, so many people, you could get one check, but they were doing three different jobs under a gig economy, right? And regular, you know, in the example of Payless, they have where they can, you know, you're working and you need to, you know, pay a utility bill on a Wednesday, but you don't get paid till Friday. Instead of having to go and run down on Friday and get a cashier's check to run it over to the utility place, you can get your money that you need on Wednesday. And through your app that's attached to your paycheck, you can pay that utility bill directly. A more efficient employee, a more loyal employee, they won't skip out early to go get a gig so they can make the money that they need because they can't get access to their paycheck until Friday. You know, I mean, those are things that really, you know, I'm about the compassionate capitalism and investors investing in entrepreneurs and innovation.
Yeah, absolutely. But
conscious capitalist is a thing that says you as a boss, the head of an organization, the executives in an organization, very specifically do things that uplift your workers. And that's one of those ways, providing financial literacy, providing fintech solutions for them to get access to their money, get access to their healthcare, their prescriptions, all those kinds of things are all, I think it's the wave of the future for really successful companies to understand and embrace how they can become more efficient using fintech.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you think about, if you are a conscious capitalist and you're an executive at a company, maybe it's a retail company, you have a lot of employees that could benefit from a service like you described. It doesn't even need to be like fintech, doesn't matter, right? It's access.
Yeah.
And I think too often where people do is they get caught up in this idea of like fintech is this new thing and it's this new technology. It's like, no, actually. And I even like, you know, some of the fintech companies, if you look at some of the sell side analysts, they cover fintech and they cover companies like Visa inside of fintech or PayPal. And I think a lot of people don't think of those companies as fintech, but in a way they're providing access, and that's what's important.
Yeah. Yeah. So here, as we, you know, got a few more minutes, let's get into the little bit more details about Vested Ventures. How did it come to be? And I know you guys offer seed financing as well as an accelerator. So share with our audience a little bit more about that and how it came to happen.
So the way that Vested Ventures is structured is we're the corporate venture capital arm of Vested. Vested is an integrated communications agency. So what we do is we take profits from Vested and we put it into the fund, and then we look to make investments directly into generally smaller startup companies. And it was a brainchild. I mentioned the co-founder Dan Simon before, the other co-founders Beena Kim, Ishvin Arora. What they realized, if you work in a communications agency, you get a lot of inquiries that come in from startup companies. And the inquiry is something along the lines of, I've just started this company and I need to get some press, which is all you do. But you typically then, the way that the agency model works is you might set up a retained agreement and you, and in a service, you know, they pay you on a monthly basis and you go out and represent them to the media. And what they realize, the co-founders realize, is that you're committing malpractice by taking capital from startup companies. We should not be doing that. To your point about being a conscious capitalist, like they need their capital for other things. So what if we turn the model on its head? What if you found a startup company with a really compelling story, with a great value proposition that aligns with our mission and our vision? What if we made the investment directly into them through Vested Ventures? And as part of that investment, now we're certainly taking an equity stake that is in a proportionate ratio to our investment, but we then give them access across the group Vested platform. So it may be we have a technology platform called Quoted, and Quoted matches journalists with sources. So let's give them access to Quoted, and they can build their own media relationships directly through that platform. We have a digital platform called Red Lab. Let's help them build a website. We have a content company called Scribe. Let's help them get some basic website copy up. What we ultimately believe is if we can help them with their communications and tell that story, that it can have a real impact on their valuations as they go into further rounds.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, we're going to be paid on that. We made a capital investment, and as they progress through their rounds A, B, C, and some exit down the line, we'll then take the exit from that. And if we've done it well, then we're going to see a return on that initial investment that we put in through those, through the access and through the network and for other things. And then you mentioned Accelerator as well. And Accelerator is kind of like the next iteration of Vested Ventures in that. Then some companies came to us and they said, I've raised a Series A and now I'm ready for the next thing. You're like, well, you're kind of in a weird position because it wouldn't quite be right for Vested Ventures because you've kind of got a lot of that stuff I just described already. Your website looks pretty good. You've got a pretty good business plan. You've got something beyond an MVP model. You're out there doing things. You probably have real investors backing your Series A. You need like a little bit more professional consultancy on your communications program, how it's structured, and how you go to market with it. So let's actually help you there on a retainer that makes a lot of sense for your capital structure and where you are in your business growth. So how that's how those two things work together.
Yeah, so when you, because you're providing the actual capital, but then all of this additional, you know, services that amplify it and your access to your network. So do you get like a in-kind equity for that as well? And also within the accelerator on the services that you have, where you might have a little bit of retainer, but you also get equity for providing that acceleration?
Now, the great thing is we can be very flexible in how we structure it. Equity is preferred for us, but there's no reason why we wouldn't look at debt as well. Convertible notes, warrants, however it is that it may be structured. On the accelerator side, same thing. It's like there's a lot of alternative ways in which we can be looking at that. Equity could come in there too. There's also just like the way that our capital is structured, and our capital investments are structured too. So depending on what the companies need, we like to be flexible. We like to work with them. It even depends on where they're, what platforms are raising their capital on. So something like a Republic, you know, if they want us to make an investment directly through there, great, we can do that as well.
Okay, cool. So that's great. I want to tell everybody, please want to go get more information. Vested Ventures, Vested, VESTED dot, tricky here, Ventures.
That's
Okay, so there's
right.
not a comma in there. It's Vested dot Ventures,
You
everybody.
got it.
All right, so tricky. Don't see a lot of those, but you know what it means when you see it. So all right, so Dell, is there an application process on your website? How do people know whether they qualify or how to start the process?
Yeah, I mean the best way to start the process is just to get in touch with me directly. I'm eric@fullyvested.com. And you come to me and let's just have a conversation. Let's just chat a little bit about your business, what it is that you're looking to achieve, and how it is that we might help you. There's times when I don't make investments. In fact, I probably make less investments than I do. I guess I say no more often than I say yes would be the more eloquent way to put that. But what I then do is, are there other introductions I can make? Are there other people that you should be speaking to? So in that conversation, I really want to understand where you are in your growth, where you are in your journey, and how can I be of the most assistance to you in that? The investments that I do make, it's like I'm looking for companies more than anything that are making a difference, that are finding a way to give people more financial access, to really help people with financial literacy, to help people understand that finance and fintech can be a force for good. That's where I generally align. So it tends to look a lot more like more B2C fintech companies in those investment portfolios, but there's no reason why there couldn't be more of an institutional angle to that as well.
Yeah. So I'm just really excited to hear about what you guys are doing. You guys truly are compassionate capitalists. You know, you could just continue on doing communications business, but to take part of your corporate mission to be able to apply all of the knowledge and resources you have for amplifying companies and brands, and then turn around and do it for the benefit of this innovation that's coming into market that can have such an impact, you know, and be the compassionate side, the company's passion, along with your capitalist side. So thank you so much, Eric, for what you guys are doing at Vested Ventures.
Absolutely, Karen. Thank you so much for having me on. This has been a real pleasure.
And I want to encourage everybody, please go out to KarenRands.co or CougarRand.com and check out what we're doing to help entrepreneurs get to the point that they can qualify for something over at Vested Ventures, perhaps, or just beyond that, you know, amplifying their direct public offering, that what we do under investor relations, and then also investors and helping them sort through the deals they're looking at and provide our team to do the due diligence on those. So, with that, I want to say onwards and upwards. Thank you very much for tuning in. Please share this podcast with those in your circles.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, The Compassionate Capitalist Show, brought to you by Cougaran Capital Holdings with Karen Rands as host. You are encouraged to visit the website cougaran.com to learn more about how Karen and her team help investors and angel groups make money by avoiding investing in deals
that have a undetected hidden flaw that will cause the company to either fail or just not scale.
And how the Cougaran Capital Companies and Partners help entrepreneurs break through their barriers to capital and live their dream by building companies that can scale and create generational wealth for their founders and investors. If your business could benefit from exposure to our audience of business executives, entrepreneurs, and investors, we are seeking financial partners and sponsors for the Compassionate Capitalist Show to help us take this podcast beyond our 150,000 listeners and amplify the message of the Compassionate Capitalist Movement by making this a top 50 business podcast. The Compassionate Capitalist Show is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, and Google Podcasts. Contact us at KarenRands.co to learn more. And as a listener, you can do your part of the Compassionate Capitalist Movement by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts and sharing this show with your friends and colleagues. Be sure to pick up your copy of Karen's bestseller that launched the Compassionate Capitalist Movement, Inside Secrets to Angel Investing, a step-by-step strategies to leverage private equity investment for passive wealth creation. Thank you for listening.